4 years ago when we just passed the election, we had some high hopes for them being able to bring forward some of the issues that Christians are usually trying to push government for.
On the feature today, ARPA policy analyst Colin Postma with a report card on the 41st Parliament, the one that's just concluded. In the news, the federal government has finally unveiled its next step in the euthanasia discussion. Huge controversy in the states involving Planned Parenthood. We take a look at how those undercover videos may impact the debate here in Canada. And the leader of the Christian Heritage Party on a new strategy heading into this fall's election.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The federal government has finally made clear how it intends to chart a course going forward on the euthanasia issue. Earlier this year, the Supreme Court issued a ruling in the Carter case, essentially striking down the criminal code provisions against doctor-assisted suicide. The court gave Parliament a year to fix the law, and a lot of people have been wondering how they propose to do that. Well, on July 17th, the government announced the creation of a three-member panel to review the Supreme Court ruling and to come up with some suggestions to amend the law. ARPA has been heavily involved in this issue, appearing as an intervener at the Supreme Court during the hearing on the Carter case. Executive Director Mark Pendinga says there's a couple of encouraging things about the creation of this committee. First of all, the notion that the input of intervener groups such as ARPA will be taken more seriously than they were taken during the Supreme Court proceedings.
There is very little in that decision that interacts with critical concerns that the interveners raised. So the fact that Parliament and this particular committee will be consulting with the interveners is a great step. And the other thing that we're quite encouraged by is that they're opening up the consultation to include the broader Canadian public through an online form. I know many of our listeners, it might ring a bell because it was just last year, 2014, where they did something similar to that on the prostitution file. They had an online consultation and many of our readers responded to that. They filled in that form. And so when the government announced its bill, in that case, a prostitution law that was a strong law, they were able to back it up and say, we've heard from Canadians and Canadians are overwhelmingly calling us to take this action. So we're encouraged that our readers and many others will be able to do the same thing on this file.
As part of its presentation to the committee, ARPA will be making the case that the existing law should be maintained through the use of the Constitution's notwithstanding clause.
We're definitely going to continue to make the case that this is a line that shouldn't be crossed, that all human life needs to be protected equally under the law, and we'll be happy to share our draft legislation with this committee, and we'll be calling on our grassroots to give a similar message through the online consultation form. At the same time, we have continually been working on a broader document that lays out different types of restrictions that could be included in a law. So if the government plows ahead and says they're going to insist on a law that meets Carter without using the notwithstanding clause, we'll be able to give quite a few different ideas in which that law can be as strict as possible.
The committee is due to report back to Parliament late this fall after the upcoming election. And Pendinga says that means that the efforts on this file can't be confined just to providing input to that committee. He says the political lobbying also needs to continue.
At the end of the day, this committee is going to be reporting back to a new parliament. We're going to get an election in October. The new government's going to wait for this report from this committee, but it's going to be up to that new government to decide what they want to do with it. That's why it's so critical that we don't put all of our efforts into just trying to reach this one committee. We need to keep having this conversation with our current MPs through the summer, as well as with the new MPs as soon as they're elected, because it's going to be that government which actually coming up with the legislation and those MPs that are voting on it.
The makeup of the committee has been criticized by pro-euthanasia groups. Two of the three members actually appeared as witnesses in the Carter case, witnesses for the government, trying to preserve the old law. And groups like Dying with Dignity say that shows a bias on the committee. But Pendinga says it would be almost impossible to find people with solid expertise in the area of end-of-life care who don't have an opinion one way or another on this issue. It's been quite a month for Planned Parenthood in the States, the release of several undercover videos in which senior people with that organization are seen sitting at restaurant tables, ostensibly negotiating prices for the sale of the organs of aborted babies. The videos are explicit, and Mike Schutten with We Need a Law, ARPA's pro-life arm, says they've provided a real eye-opener for some people.
Just the callousness of which these top executives from Planned Parenthood can talk about the work that they do. It's obvious that they're not really in this business to care for women. They're in this business to make a buck, and they're making a buck off of selling human body parts. So it's just a sad situation as far as how depraved humans can become in the desire for control, autonomy, and ultimately money.
The videos have caused a huge uproar in the States with online petitions demanding that the federal government there stop funding Planned Parenthood. So how does this play out in Canada? Shutin says, first of all, there's no evidence that Planned Parenthood is engaging in the sale of fetal body parts here. And the funding situation is also different. The feds don't provide any money directly to Planned Parenthood because healthcare money is funneled through provincial governments. But that doesn't mean there's no tax dollars going to the organization. And because of that, we need a law is lobbying MPs to start putting some conditions on those health transfer payments.
Planned Parenthood Regina, this year alone, they'll receive $142,700 from the provincial government in Saskatchewan. When we move out west farther to BC, there's the Options for Sexual Health Center in Vancouver, which was formerly known as Planned Parenthood BC, received in 2014 $1.1 million. Then we have Planned Parenthood Toronto. So their provincial government put $2.5 million towards Planned Parenthood Toronto in 2013. So our government is heavily funding Planned Parenthood right here in Canada. And thus we put out the call to action to our supporters to ask our members of parliament, hey, let's consider whether or not we should put some kind of disclaimer on that money that goes to the province and say, look, we don't want to be associated with an organization that in other areas of the world is being accused of selling babies. Parts. It's kind of a guilt by association. We're saying, look, let's remove ourselves from that. The Canadian people stand for something much better than that. We don't want to be associated with Planned Parenthood in any way.
One other thing you might not know, while the three Planned Parenthood groups Mike talks about get about 80% of their funding from tax dollars, in each case, most of the balance of the funding comes from dollars donated to the United Way. And one thing more today, we're about 2.5 months away from the federal election now, and the Christian Heritage Party is starting to gear up. Leader Rod Taylor says they've made a conscious, strategic decision this time around not to run anyone in ridings where there are strong pro-life candidates already.
We've got about 40 ridings where we said we do not want to run in these ridings because of the people that are there, and they're not all incumbents. There's a couple of up-and-coming conservatives who have strongly expressed pro-life views to us, and we're going to try to run other areas and not be in their territory.
Of course, the decision opens up the CHP to the old charge that in using abortion as the litmus test on where to run candidates, the party really is only about one issue. Taylor doesn't have a problem refuting that criticism.
We do have a broad range of policies, but, you know, our nation is polluted with innocent blood, 100,000 babies a year, and we don't think we can expect God's blessing on our economy or our cities or anything else if we're continuing to shed this innocent blood. And the nation state has an obligation to protect its own, its next generation.
A number of members of the Parliamentary Pro-Life Caucus are retiring, and Taylor says they're still researching some of the candidates who will be running to replace them. However, he says it's pretty clear that the only other party that even allows its candidates to have any pro-life opinions is the Conservatives. Back with more after this.
ARPA Canada is launching its 2015 Billboard Contest. After a successful contest in 2013, we are once again calling for submissions. This year, there are two categories. The first is abortion, and the second is open to all other submissions. The winner of the abortion category will receive an 8-inch Samsung Galaxy tablet, and the winner of the free topic category will receive a 10-inch Samsung Galaxy tablet. More details are available at arpacanada.ca/contest2015. Submissions will be received until October 23rd. We look forward to seeing your designs.
And we're back on the program. Parliament is in its summer recess right now. They pack things up at the end of June, and the politicians won't be back to work until after the election coming up in October. Now seems like a good time to review what has happened since the last election, and ARPA's done just that. Policy analyst Colin Postman has written an analysis of what he calls the highs and lows of the 41st Parliament of Canada. Colin joins me on the line today. Colin, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Highs and lows. That's another way of saying good news and bad news scenarios coming out of this parliament. Give me a little bit of an overview, first of all. On balance, do ARPA supporters have reason to be happy with what happened in the 41st parliament, or was it a write-off?
I would say that overall, there's lots of things to be very excited about. I mean, starting out 4 years ago when we just passed the election there, there was a lot of excitement, especially since it was a conservative majority government. And we had some high hopes for them being able to bring forward some of the issues that Christians are usually trying to push government for. Some of those things we have seen come to the fore, some of them not so much.
Your report talks about the highs and lows, and I should mention a link to that report is up on the Lighthouse News homepage. Talk to me about some of the highs, first of all, some of the good stuff that came out of this parliamentary session.
The one key area I would say would be the area of prostitution and human trafficking. This was an area that we were somewhat concerned about, especially after the Supreme Court of Canada struck down a number of provisions in the criminal code as unconstitutional. They gave the government basically a one-year period in which to enact new legislation that was constitutional according to how they had defined it in that ruling. What came out of that, ARPA was able to get kind of ahead of the ball game on that and put forward some recommendations in some of the hearings that they had on the issue. And we were able to mention some of the other countries around the world where some of these types of legislation had been done very well, where there was an equal balance between the rights of the individual to security, but also not allowing what we consider to be an evil trafficking of individuals or the selling of sexual services that really undermines the value of men and women who are involved in this. So Bill 36 was the government's response to that. And this is one of the best pieces of legislation that the government came out with in that whole four-year period. Another major highlight under that same area, the prostitution and human trafficking, would be Bill C-310. This was put forward by Joyce Smith. And basically, it changed the criminal code to also criminalize trafficking of persons internationally by citizen or permanent resident. What that means is that if somebody who is a Canadian citizen or permanent resident here was somewhere out in the rest of the world and was illegally trafficking individuals, they would still be able to be criminally charged here in Canada and brought to justice. So we're also very happy that that was able to be put forward.
What about on the negative side? There were some attempts on the pro-life sanctity of life issue. They got a lot of attention, but at the end of the day, didn't pass the House.
The pro-life area was one of those areas that, as Christians, we kind of hoped would be brought to the fore a little bit more with this majority government. Unfortunately, there was a number of motions that were put forward, and Stephen Harper made a pretty concerted effort to make sure that those didn't pass. And I suppose in terms of the political-only side of things, it made sense because he had made those arguments during the election campaign that he wouldn't make abortion an issue, that it wouldn't come up again. But there was a number of bills that were put forward by a number of the backbenchers. The first one that really came out of this was Motion 312, championed by Stephen Woodworth. And it was kind of the first motion that came forward on the preborn side of things. It didn't have a pro-life tinge to it per se, but it was more addressed at trying to redefine when a human being becomes a human being. In the Criminal Code of Canada under Section 223, subsection 1, it basically was talking about the human being only being a human being at the complete birth. So once they were fully outside of the birth canal. So that particular part of the criminal code is simply not acceptable, especially since now you start seeing doctors who are able to do surgeries on preborn human beings. This needs to be redefined. And that's ultimately what he was looking at, was trying to at least just set up a committee to address that. And unfortunately, the House voted that one down. The second one was Mark Warrow's Motion 408, which addresses the injustice of gendercide. So it was a bit of a different tack on the abortion issue. Very shortly after, a story came out that said that around the world, the majority of abortions tend to be female babies that are aborted. All the parties in the House spoke out very strongly against this kind of gendercide. So it made sense for somebody to put forward a motion to say this needs to be addressed. And so Mark Warrow did that. But unfortunately, the issue was viewed by pro-abortion forces as being pro-life and therefore non-votable effectively. And what ended up happening was that a special committee met behind closed doors and ended up deeming it non-votable. And it never even came to a vote in the House of Commons. A
couple of other highlights, Charlie Angus's motion on end-of-life care, and then, of course, the Reform Act. Talk to me about those two.
With regards to NDP member Charlie Angus, some of the concerns that have been raised around the end-of-life palliative care side of things is that people who are living out the end of their life in a hospital are not getting the basic care that they need. They're uncomfortable, and it's just making the problem even worse, you know, for these individuals who have chronic illness. So what this motion did, and ARPA was glad to support this motion because it looked to solve that particular problem of addressing the end-of-life care and trying to provide a solution that was respective of the human being's right to life, as well as understanding that they're not just patients, that they are human beings who need their psychological, their spiritual, their physical needs all met. And if those things are not all being met, you can't simply just deal with the healthcare issues and expect that individuals are not going to deal with depression, things like that, at the end of their life. So this motion really looked to put forward some sort of end-of-life care strategy to improve the quality and consistency of home, hospice, end-of-life care. So that was really good. We're very happy about that, that was able to be passed as well. The Reform Act is based on Michael Chong's bill C-586. Basically, what this Reform Act proposed was to remove the statutory party leader control over a local party. It also looked to strengthen the caucus as a decision-making body and reinforce the accountability of party leaders to their caucuses, basically saying that the party leaders in Canada have way too much power, and that in the end, there's a lot of voters who feel like their votes aren't being effective because the people they're voting into these MP positions aren't actually listening to them. They're listening to their party leaders. And so the idea was to reform this and really make it into something that looked democratic and kind of to restore the democratic history that this particular setup, the caucus setup, had in the past in Canada.
Colin, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good summer.
You too.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production manager, Brian Grimm. Technical director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.